Steve, thank you so much for joining this conversation. Can you give a little bit of the background about yourself and the fund that you represent?
Yeah, sure. So first, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. So myself and my firm, so I am a principal at a firm called Clear Current Capital, and we are an early stage investment firm that focuses exclusively on the alternative protein and food tech space. And we are a mission-driven firm. So for us, everything that we do and all of our investments and our thesis is all around this idea of shifting away from industrial animal agriculture. We see animal ag as inefficient, not sustainable, inhumane to the animals in the food system. And for those reasons and many others, we're trying to make investments that allow for the shift away from animal ag to be easy for consumers and the global population. So that's kind of the high level of what we are and what we focus on.
Incredible. And when you say early stage, can you describe a little bit about how you define that, the word? And the reason I'm asking is entrepreneurs typically do their due diligence by looking at your website or looking at the website of VCs, and there are words that are being used, growth stage, early stage. There's buzzwords that are being used in the industry across VCs that you have your own language that you use. Can you give those people who don't speak VC language, what's early stage defined as? And second of all is, when we talk about early stage, is there also a certain check amount that early stage would involve?
Sure. Yeah. So it's a great question, because to your point, each firm kind of defines it slightly differently. But for us, when we say early stage, what we typically invest in are seed stages, our sweet spot. We will randomly do pre-seed, but that's less likely. So seed series A is where we tend to get in. But to be more clear about what that means to us is we consider things that are too early for us, which are generally pre-seed companies, to be companies that are more at the idea stage, where you have a founder or a co-founding team. They might be incredible individuals, like strong backgrounds, but they just have an idea of what they're looking to do. And they have a very clear path forward for how they'd like to pursue the commercialization of a business, but they haven't actually started it yet. Or if they have, it's very, very early days and there's really not much to show for it. So for us, idea stage or things like that are a little too early, and we put that generally in the pre-seed bucket, but sometimes we'll get there if we think that the team is really strong. But seed, where we like to come in, which is more comfortable to us, there's some type of proof of concept, whether it's a prototype of something they're working on, or they've hit some type of milestone to show their whatever they're doing is differentiated, it's scalable, it's commercializable. They haven't started the commercialization, but they've shown that they can do it at a smaller scale or in some manner. So that's kind of where we tend to get in, and we call that seed stage typically.
Incredible.
And then to your question, you asked about typical check sizes. This is going to vary by investment firm. So what might not be the same for another seed stage investor, but for us at the seed stage, we typically invest anywhere between $250,000 to $750,000 for an initial investment in a company at that stage. And we do look to follow on in later rounds. So we have a couple of investments in companies that are well into the $2+ million marks, but the larger checks came later after we saw that the team was really executing on their milestones. But I do know seed stage and pre-seed investors that write much smaller checks and much larger checks than us. So I can really only speak to our investment size.
Amazing. Well, I appreciate that clarity as we set context of the conversation. What I would like to understand, and the entrepreneurs that I've had conversations with, we want to understand, what does your buying process look like? And I want to kind of take it all the way how the story begins to what's happening in the room when the entrepreneur is not there. So if we can just start from the beginning of the sales process, can you give us a little insight into, if I would look into your inbox, right, or your LinkedIn message, can you give me a little bit of a context in a general sense, how many pitches on a daily basis or on a weekly basis are you kind of being exposed to of cold outbound pitches? What kind of volume are you seeing typically?
Yeah, I mean, just on like cold outreach, I'd say quality weekly deal flow is anywhere between 5 and 10 companies. Sometimes it's 2, sometimes it's 15, but 5 to 10 seems reasonable on average. With that said, I get 20 to 30 inbound per week, but the vast majority have nothing to do with our strategy or anything like that. And I got a pitch for a hockey rink the other day, and it's just like they didn't do any type of diligence or looking into us. They're just throwing out anything they can get their hands on. So that one I don't respond to, but If it's generally in the food space, I respond or I set up a call.
Well, I think maybe they were thinking about it, like the hockey ring is maybe some sort of biotech bioreactor, maybe some, you know, they're putting the growing the fish underneath. Who knows? Let's talk about that inbox. When you open up your inbox and let's say somebody got your email, something like that, what's typically a subject line that's going to show its relevance? What's going to be in the body that's going to get you to respond? And do you see the channel that you're more often LinkedIn, email, or do you prefer an entrepreneur to simply get your phone number and call you?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, just to hit, there's a bunch of questions in there, so I'll just try to go through them. So the first one is just like the subject line. Honestly, it's like the thing, I read every one of my emails, right? So I don't, whether it's super pitchy sounding, like crazy opportunity, or it's just introduction and then the name of the company, it doesn't really matter. I'm going to read it either way. I tend to like the ones that feel more just normal and realistic and not like they're trying to sell me on something, mainly because, and even you mentioned, what's the sales cycle like, or like our buying process. And for us, we're not buying anything in our minds. Obviously we're purchasing equity in a company, but we see this as a long-term relationship that we're building, where after we invest, we want to help these companies as best we can. So yeah, it's more of a long-term relationship that we're buying into, as opposed to just a one-time purchase of equity. But yeah, so the subject line, it could be anything. I'm going to read it either way. In the body, I just want to understand, why are you reaching out? Why did you think of Clear Current Capital specifically? What is the general overview of your business and what you're looking to achieve? And why are you reaching out? Are you reaching out just to get advice? Are you reaching out for an investment? Are you raising a round? Like, what is generally, what's the information on the round? If you are raising a round, are you raising a seed round, $3 million seed round? We have 50% committed already. We're looking to close by, I don't know, in 2 months from now. Like that, that's much easier for me to respond to than, hi, this is our company. Let me know if you want to talk. Because then I don't know what the topic of discussion is.
Understood. So let's just understand the elements that need to be included in that email to make it the good rather than the hockey ring, right? So which is the extreme, right? So what I'm hearing from you is, answer the question to me, why me, right? Mm-hmm. Why are you talking to me specifically? That's really important. Mm-hmm. And help me understand what is the purpose of why you're talking to me? Because obviously, like, you're asking me my advice, you're asking for my money. Mm-hmm. What are you asking from me right now in the moment? Mm-hmm. And is it important for you to understand, if they are raising money, I am looking to raise this much money at this evaluation by this time. Do you want to see that level of sophistication in email, or you're okay with it being raising we're early stage, raising a seed and alternative proteins? It's aligned with your mission. Can we jump in a 30-minute phone conversation? What would get you to a conversation, and what would make you want to take that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, again, I can only speak for myself. If it's something in the alt protein space that seems interesting, I'm going to take the conversation either way. I'm totally fine if it's just, we're raising a seed round, and this is what we do for a company. I'd love to hear if you'd be interested in like learning more. That's fine with me. Some do add more color, where they say, we're raising this amount, we close on this amount, this is the timing. Valuation is more like, depends on the round. Sometimes the valuation is set by another investor. Sometimes they're looking for a lead to set the valuation, or sometimes they're negotiating one-off with every investor through safe notes. If they have the information and they want to share it, great. But I don't think for a cold outbound email, it's necessary in my mind.
Yeah. I want to just have a Calendly link in there that you could just press on it and book a time that's convenient for you, or you prefer, you know, ask them, can you suggest some times? You want a hard ask, or would you want a more soft ask, somebody saying, what are your thoughts? Or is this relevant? What do you prefer?
I mean, this is one that I think a lot of different people would have different answers. I personally love Calendly. If someone reaches out and they say, and they're not pushy, if they just say, if you're interested, I have also included my Calendly link below. It's my full schedule. Feel free to book a time. To me, I'm like, great. That facilitates this whole conversation very easily. I just have to respond saying, hey, I picked the time. There are people out there that, for some reason, I don't know if it's an ego thing, but they hate Calendly, where they're like, they think that if you don't have the time to go back and forth and share your schedule, that it's like, you think you're too good. I'm not that person. So I love Calendly. I think it's super easy if someone gives it to me and in a very just like nice way.
So the first meeting be 30 minutes, an hour, 45 minutes. How much of your time do you think you want that first meeting to be?
Typically 30 minutes. I mean, in my mind, if it's a really great conversation, I'm going to want to schedule time, additional time. Or if I don't have another call after that, I'll just ask if they're free to keep going, but 30 minutes is enough.
Can you talk through what are you trying to accomplish in that first meeting? From your perspective, what do you want to see in that first 30-minute conversation?
Yeah. So since we invest at such an early stage, for me, it's very much so focused on the team or the individual that's starting the company. So in the first 30-minute conversation, the first 5, 10, 15 minutes, I'm happy if we really dig into who that person is or who the team is, why they started the company, what's their mission around it? Like, did they just do it for an opportunistic thing? Is this part of a greater mission? What's their background previously? Did they start multiple companies? Is this their first company? Did they work in a similar field, a different field? Like, I really want to understand like who's driving this forward. And the reason being, at the early stage, many companies will pivot 1, 2, 3, 4 times, maybe more. Like they'll pivot nonstop. And it's the team that will be the thing that makes a company successful or a failure at the end of the day, most of the times. So I think I invest in teams and individuals more so than products or companies. And I think that is something that I wish more entrepreneurs would understand, because sometimes they'll say, hi, I'm this person and I'm the CEO and what we do as a company is XYZ. And they'll just start going into a pitch. And yeah, I care about the company. That's what ultimately I'm going to be backing. But who am I talking to? Like, what led you to this part of your life where you started a company in this space? And that's very important to me.
Understood. Okay, great. So focusing on, and what can you talk a little bit about what sounds to you like these are good markers? Are there certain language that you're looking to pick up on that'll give you greater confidence in the team? Or is it more of a gut feeling that you have? Because usually you're meeting typically with a CEO, it's usually a one-on-one conversation. Mm-hmm. Is there something that are markers that the CEO needs to highlight to give that confidence to you?
That's a great question. That's a harder one to give like quantifiable markers. Yeah. But I think the things that stand out to me generally, when the individual or the CEO is talking about their journey to getting to this point of starting a company, they had various experiences in their life up to this point that all led to them recognizing that they knew they had to start a company focused on a solution to a specific problem that they're now trying to address. Because there's tons of problems to address. And if you just see it as an opportunity, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But generally, the more like genuine individuals who are creating a company because they had 5, 10 experiences in their lives that both professionally and personally that have made them realize this is something that needs to be done. So that's something that indicates to me that they're really in this. They're not just going to raise around and then if it's not going well, they're going to be like, well, I tried. If it's something that's truly meaningful to them, that will push them to keep trying to figure out a way to succeed even when things aren't going well. And I know that's not like a great answer, but there's a lot of gut feeling, but I look to see that they're really in this for the long run and it's not just like a quick flip type opportunity. Exactly. But I'm also a mission-driven investor, right? I have a big mission that I'm looking to focus on. I'm sure there's a lot of traditional tech VCs out there that they're looking at it purely from a financial standpoint. So maybe just purely opportunistic entrepreneurs are not as off-putting.
So at that, let's assume that you have a sense this person is mission-driven, they're committed, they have a good background maybe the team has a good technical background. What do you need to check off to go into that second meeting? And what typically happens in your mind in that second meeting? Is that second meeting happening in a few days, in a week? Is there something else that you want to see in between the first and the second meeting to help you qualify this company?
Yes. So I think in general, like we have like I wouldn't say it's like a definitive step-by-step process for our diligence, but I tend to follow a pretty normal approach. So like, I would say for like just first to second meeting, basically I want to see that like at first onset, I like the team. I think that they might be the right people to focus on a company that they're creating and the business that they're trying to create. It fills a gap in the market. I know the alt protein market in depth in its entirety. And if you're creating the 10th company that does the same thing as 9 others, I don't want a second meeting, no matter how great the team is, because it might just not be, it might be saturated, but I want to see that it's filling a gap in the market and that I like the team and the skill sets. That generally will then lead me to saying, I'd love to learn more. If you have additional information you can share after the meeting, whether it's a data room or there's just other documents, I'd love to see those if possible. And then for me, the next stage is really going through all of that and digging in deeper to see, okay, do I think that this warrants a deeper due diligence?
What is in that documentation that's going to catch your eye? Because this is actually funny. I just spoke to an entrepreneur and said, look, you know, I'm struggling to understand what is going to should be, you know, we took an early stage, we have some proof of concept, but our data, you know, it's still early, right? We're still figuring things out, right? So what do you want to see in that data room that'll take you to the second meeting?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is I want to have a full picture of what the story of the company is to get to this point and what this, the planned story is or the future of this company is going forward. That's the short answer. In terms of what gets the job done, it can mean many different things. To your point about companies are young, and they don't have a lot of like data or things of that nature, that's fine. It's not expected that you have truly hardcore built out financial models that are almost worthless at this stage. And obviously you don't have historical information and things like that. But what I want to see is clear depiction of the business, what you're trying to accomplish, how you're trying to accomplish it, what the differentiators are, whether it's a technology, whether it's a team, whether it's a strategic relationship with a different player in the space, whatever it is, I want to understand what the differentiators are. And then what the plan is. You're planning to raise a certain amount of money. What are you going to do with that money? Why is that the exact amount of money you need for the next 18 to 24 months? And what are the milestones that you're planning to hit? And then after you hit those milestones, what's after that?
And you want to see that in the docs, or you want to see that in a second conversation? Like you're saying, like, I don't want to spend another conversation discussing this. I want you to just understand your thoughts, to organize you thought this through, because you should have thought this through. If it kind of makes sense, we'll have that second conversation.
Yeah, I mean, so just to be more clear about that second conversation, for me and for ClearCurrent, I try to limit how much time I take of the founders when I do my diligence. So that second conversation is a very important one, where it's an hour and a half to 2 hours long. And I have a list of every single question I could possibly want to talk about, whether it's on the team, the market, the business, the go-to-market plan, the syndicate of the deal, if they're syndicating it to multiple investors, just the IP, the tech, whatever it is. I have all of the questions I want to discuss in that second meeting. So for me, as I'm digging through all of the materials and trying to come up with questions, I'm really trying to see, like, do I think that they are even in a position to answer these questions? Or is this something that is just too early? They haven't thought this through, or do they not understand the market? Because sometimes a pitch deck looks great in the first 30-minute call. And then when you dig into what their differentiator is and you see a little bit more detailed information, as an investor, I see a lot of companies. Sometimes I see things that I'm like, oh, I know two other companies that are doing this exact same thing. So it's not as differentiated as they might think.
Yeah. So do you want to, because I want to spend just a few more minutes on that doc, because it sounds like that's really crucial. Would you prefer that a founder would send you a video overlaid on the doc with him kind of taking you step by step on the doc? Do you want a Q&A? Do you want something? Do you want to be structured where this is what we understand the competitive market looking like? How do we make it easier for you to digest so you see and understand that this is a very serious player? This is not someone who's taking your time lightly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And to be clear here, it can be one document. It can be a data room, which is just a link you click on, and there's many, many documents in that data room. And generally, overall, the main categories of things I'm looking to understand, I want to understand the team. I want to understand the market as they see it. What is the market that they're going after? I want to understand what they're doing as a company. What is the technology or product or service that they are doing? And I want to understand that in detail, like spell it out either in words or pictures or descriptions. It could be one document. It could be 10 documents that goes into all the different offerings that you're trying to accomplish. I'm looking to understand more so also about the plan for the business model. Is this a B2B company, B2C company? How are you manufacturing or producing whatever? Are you doing things in-house? Are you doing with third-party service providers? And basically anything about the company. But in the data room, there's always going to be things that are just like articles of incorporation, just like proving that you're actually like an incorporated company. You're going to probably have a pitch deck in there that might be the overview. Maybe we walk through it in the 30-minute call. You're going to have some bios or backgrounds on the team. If it's a company that's selling a food product, for instance, like in my space, I look at a lot of companies that are just selling traditional food products. I want to understand, what's the stage area? Are you pre-revenue? Are you post-revenue? What's the pipeline of potential customers that you have? Do you have any LOIs signed? If you do, I want to see those LOIs, and potentially I want to speak to those potential customers or your actual customers. If you've raised money in the past, like if this isn't your first round, I want to see a cap table, see who's on the cap table right now. And that'll give me a better understanding for like what the equity breakdown is, because I want to make sure that the founding team has good incentives long-term and they have enough equity. So the list goes on and on. I've seen data rooms that have one document or two documents. I've seen data rooms that have videos of product demos and articles of them being written up in the news and everything and anything. So it's hard to say that there's a perfect data room, but the founders should take a step back after they put a data room together or they put a document together and say, if someone was new coming into this for the first time, can they go through all of this and have a full understanding of who we are, why we're here, what we're looking to do, and what the plans are going forward in specific terms for the next 18 months, and then more higher level strategic terms after that. Those are the big things that you want to be taken away from that information.
Amazing. I mean, I can see a clear checklist what the founder should be able to have in place. Let's assume that it's not a good fit, right? Let's assume it's not a good fit. At the end of that first call, are you comfortable with the founder saying, here's the access date to our data room, right? Can we set up a conversation in 1 week or in 10 days to understand where you guys stand, answer any particular questions you may have, or get your feedback on why maybe not been a good fit? Is that an okay next step for you at the end of that first meeting?
I don't think there's anything wrong asking that. I personally would turn down that type of response, mainly because if my schedule allows, I'll go through all the material the second that I have access to it. But there's times when my weeks are slammed and I don't get to the data room or that data, and I don't get to go through it the way I want for 5-6 days. And if that's the case, then I don't want to have a meeting set up in 6-7 days from now, and I don't even know if I have the time to go through it. So I generally say, like, I will let you know after I've gone through the data room if I think it makes sense for additional conversations. And I genuinely mean that. I always get back to founders and don't know that all investors do, which I think is pretty crappy, to be honest. But that's kind of how I handle it, just because I want to make sure I could actually give it the time it deserves.
When is it appropriate to reach back out to you in an email if they haven't heard back from you in 7 days? When is it appropriate, and what should be in the email? Should it be curious about your thoughts, any follow-up? Like, what do you want to see that email that will urge you to respond?
It doesn't need to be long. It doesn't need to be detailed. It's just like, honestly, a quick check-in just to make sure that you got access to everything okay. And just a reminder, I'm here to answer any questions that you might have as you go through the materials. Let me know if you want to set up a follow-up call in the coming days. Like something like that is like fully appropriate.
And imagine the it's not a good fit for you for whatever reason. How can the founder get your time to get feedback from you why it's not a good fit? Because that could be as valuable even in their growth process. How can they get that time from you to get honest feedback? What does it take?
So getting time might be more difficult than just getting an email response. Because in reality, like to the point that I made, we get 5 to 10 conversations a week with new startups. So call that, I don't know, 500 startups a year that I might speak with. If I only make 3 to 4 investments a year in new companies, then that means I'm passing on 496 companies or however many companies. If each one of them, I had a 15 to 30 minute call about why I passed, I can't do that. Like it is too much time to do that. I am more than happy to, if someone asks, I always provide a general reasoning for why we passed. I think it's fully appropriate to ask why someone passed. If they don't give you, like if I pass, I generally put it in the email why, like the reasons why. But if an investor doesn't, like there's no reason that you shouldn't ask why. Maybe you don't like the answer, but you have every right to ask.
And let's assume you've passed, but he still wants to keep a relationship with you. Like he wants to make sure that you're updated around their milestones. Mm-hmm. Maybe he wants that you're top of mind for another investor. You know, can we add you to our newsletter or can we send you a quarterly update? What do you feel is appropriate?
Yeah, I mean, if they want to keep that relationship alive in some way, like I definitely have had companies say like, would it be okay if we added you to our newsletter or something like that? And I generally say, yeah, because I like the people I speak with. And just if I pass, it doesn't make me not want to hear from them ever again. So that's totally fine. And I guess maybe some people wouldn't like that. I don't mind that at all.
And then do you say you give a reason why it's a no, right? You'll say, no, I noticed this is about through your data room. This is what I noticed. So this is why I realize it's not appropriate. It's not a good fit. No, we're trained typically as salespeople or business development professionals to handle objections. So typically they'll say it's a no, but really, you know, did you consider this point or that person? Do you want them, or you think it's appropriate for them to try to handle your objections? Do you see a lot of companies try to handle your objection when you give your reasoning? Or do you just say like, okay, he's passed. Thank you so much for your feedback. Moving forward.
Yeah, I would say that 99% of the time they just say, thank you, I appreciate it. Hopefully we meet in the future or something like that. If it's not combative, if it's truly just trying to like shed some light on additional information that maybe I didn't see in the data room, or they just want to make sure I understood, then I don't mind if they say like, I fully understand your points. I just wanted to let you know that on X, Y, and Z point, here's some information that you might find useful. That I love that. And I think that's very good because like you believe in your business and you think maybe you want to just highlight certain things. I very rarely, but it has happened. I've had people come back in a combative way, more so in like a, you don't understand this or that. I don't know what the value.
You really need the hockey ring. You don't understand. The hockey ring is, exactly. Is the next big thing.
Exactly. And it's okay if you like, I want you to be have conviction about your company, but if to be combative, that's really only going to hurt you because investors talk to each other. And yeah. If someone says, hey, have you talked to this company? And if I say, yeah, I did. And I passed, and they say, why? I might say why. And then also be like, also, they kind of came back and it was, they were a little rude to me. So just be cautious of that founder, because when things get tough in the business, even if you invest, if things get tough in the business, if a person's reacting like that, that might not be the person that you want leading a business that you've invested in. So I don't mind responses. I love clarity if they think I missed something, but just be respectful always. Because also in the, to be, this is just being brutally honest. Sometimes I pass because I don't believe that you're the right person or the right team to get the job done. Uh-huh. You might have great tech. You might have great differentiated approach or something. I don't believe in the team. That is the hardest feedback to give. And I don't really give that often if I don't need to, because it's not that I think that someone will fail. I'm making educated guesses here, right? That's what I'm doing. But sometimes it's pattern recognition. I talk to 500 companies a year. Sometimes founders stand out to me as like, wow, they are a rock star. Other times I can see they're inexperienced as founders. I only make a couple of decisions a year. I want to back the ones that I feel super, super confident about. So it's like, if you're really pushing to get a different answer, the answer might not be the one that you want to hear.
Amazing. Now we're going to go to the good news. That was the bad news. Okay. Now let's say you went to the data room and answered your questions. Now we go into that 2-hour, 1.5-hour conversation. Is there, in your own way, is there a certain name for that for you? Do you call the first meeting something and the second meeting something, just so we know what those terms could be? Or there's no official name for it in your, if you had a CRM, would you call it?
I mean, honestly, like, I don't have like a specific name. I had an intro discussion, intro call for the first one. And then for that second discussion, it would probably be like deeper diligence call, or deep diligence call or something like that.
So it's DD time.
Yeah. But also it's because you're asking about a CRM, like what they should put in their CRM, like from start to finish, I can give you 7 things, like milestones, and we could talk through all of them, but like, I could give you 7 milestones that I would put in there. Like,
yeah. Let's before we go to DDD, can you tell me what are these 7 here? Deeper diligence. Let's give us the background. Cause again, every single minute that you're giving us is gold. And I don't think a lot of entrepreneurs have heard this level of detail being shared, because most VCs don't open up their playbook. The conversation we have. So can you give us, what are those 7 steps?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you what I have. Again, some VCs might do an intro call and that's all they need. Others might go much further, deeper, many other steps than me. So this is just what I do. But generally it's introduction, like an intro discussion. The second thing that I would put on a CRM is like the data room or additional data has been requested. Like that's been requested and sent. The third one is the data room has been reviewed and there's a request for a longer call with management, right? And maybe it's just that the third one could just be the deeper diligence, right? The fourth is after that call, generally what I like to do is a lot of reference calls. And we can get into who I want to talk to for reference calls, but The next would be I've requested references or intros to a reference. Then there's generally discussions around terms. And that, again, that will be nuanced depending on the specifics of the round. Then for us, we have an investment committee meeting internally at Clear Current Capital where it's, we have three voting members and we have a long meeting where we go through everything and we vote basically yes or no. And then the final thing is decision around the investment.
Amazing. Cool. First of all, thank you so much for sharing that. And what I love just about that, that I'm realizing as we speak to founders, we have to have that data room as a step in the sales cycle. Because I'm realizing it's not like step one is meeting, then go to deeper diligence, and then you go into reference calls, and then you go into internal deliberation, right? So no, we need to, because we really need to get that step of, did they look in that room? And did it pass? And did they give us feedback on that? So that's super valuable. Okay. Can we speak about that deeper diligence and what the reference calls are going to look like for the stage that the companies you're investing actually are?
Yeah. I mean, the deeper diligence is just that, like for us, I have like an internal, I don't know if you want to call it like a memo that I like to create for every investment, but in the memo, like five key sections and each there's sub questions within each of those sections. And I personally have created like a weighting mechanism where some questions, like the rating that I give the answer to one question might outweigh the weighting of another. Something has more impact than another, but I have tons of, I basically want answers to every single part of my investment memo. And because that's what I built that structure to hit on all the key parts of a business that I want to understand when I'm investing in them. So when I go through the data room, I basically am filling out just quickly, not like creating a memo, but just quickly saying like, I have this information. I don't know anything about this.
Is that an Excel? Is it an Airtable?
I have it both in Excel and in Word.
And then can you give us a sense of what is, if you would give that value to the highest things that are the most valuable in terms of on that data table, what would you say the three top categories are the most valuable?
Yeah. I mean, so for me, again, the five high level categories that all have underlying components that roll up into the big categories, the five high level ones are the team, the market, the tech or a product or service, the business model attractiveness, and then the deal terms and my confidence in the deal. So for me, team, I personally weight team at 50%. So basically, because again, at the early stage, you're going to pivot. So if it's not the right team, I don't want to invest. So if the team doesn't pass what I think is something I'm excited about, the deal's never getting done. I don't care how big the market is, how good your tech is or anything like that. Like the team is everything to me. Beyond that, I put a lot of weight on what you're actually offering, whether it's a product or a service, and how that's solving a problem in the market. Is it a real problem or is it a nice to have? So that's a big one. And then the attractiveness of the business model is probably the next biggest thing, where how are you approaching selling this product or service or offering? Are you doing it in a way that I think makes sense, that's scalable, that will have impact in the food space?
Incredible. Moving on to the reference calls, who's going to be because the team seems to be the highest and the most valuable piece of your weight, how do you create references about the team that are valuable?
Yeah, so it's the reference calls, like everything rolls back to the team. Like if they said something to me in a pitch or the deeper diligence call, and then I talk to anybody, whether it's an advisor or a potential customer, and they say something that's like the opposite of what the team said, then I think, okay, well, what's truthful here? Like it starts to raise questions. But if it completely validates everything that they said, then it's like builds trust and it shows that they're doing what they're saying they're going to do. But in general, reference calls, and again, I don't know what other investors do. I put a lot of weight on reference calls. I like to talk to like the high level categories for that. I like to talk to customers or companies that have signed letters of intent, which are generally non-binding, but just basically the ones who said, I'm going to buy this product or service in the future. So I like to talk to them. I like to talk to strategic partners. Like if they're, let's say, a cell-based meat company and they have a strategic relationship with a bioreactor company, and they say that that's a core component of their differentiated value or something like that, then I want to talk to that strategic partner. Most companies have some type of key advisors that are working with the company, either formally or informally. I like to talk to them. And those are great team references because the advisors usually know that those team members from prior lives and in different roles in different ways. And then I also like to talk to past investors, like who's invested in the company in the past? How have you felt like the team's executing and things of that nature? I generally don't like to talk to other investors that are considering the same investment round as me because there's bias that's involved. And I like to make my decision based on my own conviction, not necessarily the whatever group think might be happening. So I usually don't talk to investors considering the current round. But yeah, I mean, and then I always say, and if there's anyone else that you think would be helpful to speak with, I'll talk to them.
I'm imagining for these companies and the founders, if they're talking to, say, you know, they may be having similar amount of conversations with the investors, how do they protect the advisors from having 30 conversations?
That's a great question. And it should, the access to anybody else, access to anybody's time should really be dependent on like, how much is this investor planning to invest and how much of the round does that make up? So what I mean by that is like, I mentioned we really early stage companies will invest sometimes 250 to 500,000. If you're raising a $500,000 round and I'm willing to invest half or 100% of that, I should get access to anybody that I want to talk to. If you're raising a $10 million round and I'm going to put in 250, I'll get access to whoever you think is more willing to talk to me. But if it's like, I'm really just trying to hit on everybody and anyone, then honestly, the juice might not be worth the squeeze there, right? Like I want it to be, right? Like it's weird for me to give this advice openly to founders, but if someone's only going to take up 1/100th or 1/10th of your round and they're just spending hours and hours and hours of time with them, or your advisors are, or tons or your potential customers are, at some point you have to say like, listen, you have the information that you have and hopefully you can make a good decision around this.
And Steve, for those reference call, would it be enough in that case if it was just a video or if it was written, this is my thesis, you can have access to the data room, what he shared about us and his decision-making process. And if you,
that's interesting.
I only want to give you access if you give me a tremendous amount of commitment that I know how serious you are and you're giving me a large size of the check. But I want to guard those people's time because that I'll burn them if I give them too much access.
That's a very interesting idea. I really haven't seen that, but I think that that's a really good idea because in general, if there's a video that you could watch of a key advisor going over all the points of what they think about the company and why they're advising them, that's definitely helpful. I personally like to ask very specific questions. But if, again, if I'm like a tiny checking around and I might not get access to that advisor, then that's definitely helpful. But that's an interesting idea.
So as we're closing out the conversation, as we get into the final board meeting here, right, the final conversation, what's happening in that conversation of the three of you in the room? You got the references, you went to the data room, you know, you discussed the cap table. Can you tell me what's actually going to be happening around that table between the three of you? How's that decision being made in that room?
Yeah, that's a good question. And at that point, the team has probably discussed the potential investment opportunity a couple of times, just informally. So everyone's generally aware of what's going on, but we kind of walk through key parts of our findings and we'll use the memo that was created kind of just as like a talking points, but we jump around all over the place. The gist is we look to see like, is this going to be something that could impact the food space and shift animals away from the food system in a scalable manner? Is it different from companies we've already invested in? Is this not only a different type of company like in the space, but is this going to diversify our portfolio? Because sometimes there's companies that are really great, but we just invested in a very similar company. So it might be a great company that might not be a fit for ClearCurrent Capital specifically. So there's that added level of the decision-making process that entrepreneurs need to realize that sometimes you're great. It's just, it might not fit a firm's portfolio given what already exists. And then there's discussion around, okay, if we do want to invest, how much do we invest? How, like, do we want to invest this lower amount, a higher amount? Do we want, like, what is the valuation? How does that impact the potential return profile of the investment based on what we think the company might grow into? And then there's, how much do we want to reserve for follow-on funding in a future round? Do we want to have capital reserve, which we generally do, and we have a structure around that. But it's really trying to talk about all the key findings, really the risks that are associated with it, and if we're comfortable with those risks going forward. And I hope that answered the question. But
was very specific. No, it was great. It was great answer. The things that you're thinking about in that room. And let's assume you guys move forward. I spoke to a founder, you know, last week, and he says, I need to raise X amount by the end of the next month. Is there a certain expected cycle of how long that process will take? And when is it appropriate for a founder to understand the length of your cycle of making decisions? And the last question I'm going to ask for the interview today, is there a way that they can speed up the purchasing cycle to fit their timeline?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, generally, when I talk to like our portfolio companies on when they're about to raise their next round, I advise that they start raising 6 months or earlier before they run out of runway. So they're burning cash each month, growing the business. And the reason that I picked 6 months is not because it takes ClearCurrent 6 months to do diligence, but unless you find one investor that takes up the whole round, you're generally going to be raising money from many different investors that all come together as a group for that round. So it might take, you might find someone who's interested on day one. You might find someone who's interested on day 60. You don't know. So starting the process 6 months or earlier before you run out of money is kind of like a best, like a, I don't know, like a, just the best practices approach to fundraising. And you never know what could happen. And in a good scenario, you might close around in a month because you just, you have something different. You're hitting on things and the market loves what you're bringing to the table. But other times it really might come down to the wire and you don't want to be in that position. If a founder said, I need to raise money or I'm going to be out of business in a month, in the back of my head, I wouldn't say it to their face. In the back of my head, I'd say, you're going out of business. Like a month is a very short time.
It's time to go back to the ice rink.
Exactly. And the only way to speed it up to your other question is like, it wouldn't look good from like a value proposition standpoint, but if you start offering very attractive terms, like if I'm making this up because valuations are both an art and a science, but if a company quote unquote should be valued at $20 million, again, should be is relative, but if they should be valued at 20 million and you need cash and you're like, I'm open to raising $1 million at an $8 million valuation. I mean, some investors might be interested. Some might say, no, I'm not interested because it shows maybe a sign of weakness or something. But if it, others might be like, I'll dig in, I'll make a decision very quickly because maybe it's not a sign of weakness. Maybe you just need cash very quickly. I don't know. That would scare me, quite honestly. If someone said we need cash in a month, then here's a crazy discount, our valuation or our last round. That to me kind of says things aren't going very well, but other investors have different risk appetites.
Well, Steve, I thank you for this process you just shared with me and kind of led me into your data room. Because that's what I feel like. I kind of feel like I just kind of opened the door there and just looked around. I was like, oh, wow, this looks very nice. So I'm so grateful on behalf of everyone who's listening that you've given us this gift. And my hope is that anyone who's listening is you understand the value of what you received today, because it's a playbook. You really got a playbook into the mindset of a really successful investor, and he's giving you a tremendous gift. So thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the time. And all I'll say is I gave you my process in general, but it's different depending on all the investors out there. Everyone has their different approach. So sales is difficult. And if you're trying to raise money, just be ready to take curveballs because you never know what you're going to get.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, thank you.